see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers now playing only in theaters. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I really think between this and the cold opens, like, The Bachelor is just gunning for that Emmy real hard.
They're never going to get an Emmy. Like, they can try. They should have one by now, in my opinion. Like, obviously, I make a whole podcast about this show. I think it's the best thing TV has to offer.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon.
So this week, honestly, I have a lot of questions about like what we're all doing here in Bachelor Nation. Like, is this a sorority?
Right. I mean, are we here to make friends?
Yeah. Like, is it a sorority? You know, like, I don't get it.
Oh, a sorority. I mean, we need more clarity on this, Claire. Like, maybe next week, Victoria can shed a little bit of light on whether this is actually, in fact, a sorority, like the one in which women gather and befriend each other because it's a sorority.
Right. Yeah, I need a little bit more info on that. But until next week, we're just going to have to muddle through with the information that we have right now. So to help us sort through the second episode of Matt's season, we're joined by a very special guest, HuffPost senior culture editor and our wonderful boss, Aaron Evans. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, y'all, for having me. I gladly accept this rose today.
I mean, it's just such a pleasure to have you on here. We end up Slack chatting each other throughout every episode, so this was just bound to happen. We're very grateful for your presence. And before we kind of get into the fun TV recap of this all, we just obviously want to address the pretty tough week plus that most of us have likely had, given the recent attempted insurrection at the Capitol, which is, again, like not a phrase I thought I would be saying, but here we are. And Aaron, you wrote a really, really fantastic piece about the horrors that we saw last Wednesday. The title is "For Black Americans, the White Terror in DC Looks Familiar." Could you tell us a little bit about what your piece was about and a little bit of the history that you kind of dig into?
Sure. I mean, I think part of, you know, as an editor, I often hide behind other people's words and make them beautiful. But something about last week and the language that so many politicos and pundits were using around, you know, this, you know, doesn't represent who we are as America, or this isn't America, really enraged me, knowing the history of this country and the response of really white terror when it comes to change and racial progress in this nation. And I had recently read about the Wilmington race riot in 1898, where essentially Southern Democrats were unhappy with post-Reconstruction efforts move towards racial progress. Formerly enslaved people were gaining political power, and there had been really developments of these biracial governments, and Black-owned businesses were popping up in cities across the South. And, you know, white racists didn't like that and decided to literally successfully enact the first and only successful coup d'etat in America. They booted this government, and white supremacists took over in Wilmington, North Carolina. And, you know, that was just one very early example of the way white terror is really embedded in our American democracy. And obviously there are countless other examples of history showing us exactly what it meant to build this country, and how white supremacists is often a reaction to these moments of kind of racial progress. Obviously, there was the Tulsa Race Massacre, which happened literally 100 years ago this year, which I didn't go too deep into this piece about. But there's so many instances of this happening. And I think a lot of times it's easy to whitewash and put your rose-colored glasses on about how much progress we have made in this country. And I thought this piece, I thought there needed to be a little quick history lesson on how we aren't so far removed from white supremacy being the kind of go-to response to these kind of moments of change in the country.
Absolutely. And I think especially, you know, as white people, we have a responsibility to acknowledge that this is exactly who we are to an extent. It's not the complete picture of this country, but it is a significant part of the picture. And we are just really grateful that you wrote this piece, and everyone should go on HuffPost and read it. We'll link it in the show notes. It's a really, you know, essential history lesson for people who don't know this history, and just like a great reminder for those of you that are aware of this history.
Yeah. Thanks, Erin, so much for sharing that. And for everyone listening, you know, we're in this really scary moment. It feels unprecedented in a lot of ways. In other ways, as Erin, as you say, it's quite precedented, not in a reassuring way. But we hope this episode brings you a little moment of levity, and take care of yourselves, take care of the people around you, especially in the days leading up to the inauguration. It's a tough time, and we're going to have to get through it together. So we're going to make a pivot now to The Bachelor, second episode of Matt James's season. And let's all just get ourselves in the headspace to think about Matt's journey to find love. The Bachelor is achieving this season by doing these sort of cold opens, it seems like, with clips pulled from dramatic moments in the show. So we actually open with Sarah appearing to faint at the rose ceremony, which actually happens at the end of this episode. So cut back to the week's beginning. Matt's going for a jog. He's riding his Peloton. He's taking a shower. He's ready for his first dates.
I mean, the amount of exercise this man does is just truly impressive. Also, that like nice, not so subtle product placement of the Peloton. Like, they are just leaning in. They're like, work out at home, y'all. Matt James will be your fearless leader. I mean, I really think between this and the cold opens, like, The Bachelor is just gunning for that Emmy real hard.
They're never going to get an Emmy. Like, they can try. They should have one by now, in my opinion. Like, obviously, I make a whole podcast about this show. I think it's the best thing TV has to offer. But we move into the women receiving their first date card. So they're all kind of hanging out in the common area and talking about whether they're in a sorority. You know, Katie wasn't in a sorority. She didn't have roommates. So She doesn't like to be hanging out with this many women at once, quite frankly. If she did, she would be in a sorority. Victoria is a queen and Matt is her king. That also is unlike a sorority in the sense that it's more about like one woman being with a man rather than a bunch of women. So this emerges as a theme. How did you guys feel about the kind of dumping on sororities that really happened throughout this episode?
I mean, this is my first season I've ever watched of The Bachelor, partially because it's a Black Bachelor, but also because I used to work with Matt James at a media company years ago, which we can talk about later.
Oh, yes. I think we mentioned this briefly offhanded last week. So we definitely need that tea from piping hot tea from you, Aaron.
Oh, the tea is so lukewarm. It's not even funny. But I was shocked at how much the sorority kind of trope was mentioned. And obviously this podcast is called Here to Make Friends. And I was like, oh, they really are leaning into this whole narrative and it keeps coming up and I'm shocked and maybe not appalled, but very
lightly concerned.
Exactly. About how often this is coming up. And it was very, I mean, I have a lot to say about so-called Queen Victoria.
Victoria has a lot to say as well. So this is a very Victoria heavy episode. And it's true, like the sorority thing, you know, the not here to make friends trope was bigger, I think, when Emma and I named this podcast. I have not seen such a density of not here to make friends commentary in a long time.
Yeah, this felt like a throwback almost to that sort of, like there were a lot of women discussing how it's getting catty in here and the claws are going to come out and I don't want to be in a sorority. Like these are things that were said in season one and that have become sort of embedded implied tropes of the show. But I think in recent years, we've seen a lot more stress on like, we are here to make friends. We're buds. And last season on The Bachelorette, there was like such unity among most of the men, with a few exceptions, that this was like, oh, right, we're back. Okay, we're back to this. although really they all seem to get along outside of Victoria.
Yeah, she's kind of the elephant in the room in that sense. And so Chris arrives to introduce the week's structure to them. And this is an unusual decision. There are like 23 women left, or more even, like 25 women. There are a lot of women left.
It's too many.
I neglected to count them because
that's why they're in a sorority, Claire.
I think there are actually 25 women left. And there's only going to be one group date this week. There's going to be a group date and two one-on-ones, which is really bizarre for this early in the season because they want to get as many women on dates as possible. And two group dates accomplishes that more efficiently. So not everyone's going to be getting a date. And it turns out that five women don't get dates this week, which is rough. The first date card, Chelsea, I just want to call out that Chelsea is wearing like an enormous white sort of teddy bear jacket that looks like a cloud. And it distracted me.
I loved it.
I wanted to be in it.
It's just so clear that Chelsea is a New York City model because yeah, she has impeccable fashion.
Yeah, she is a fashion icon of our reality TV.
Oh yeah.
Lifestyle. Like could she just link her clothes every week? I honestly haven't checked her Instagram. She probably is.
Yeah,
that's a thing influencers do. I'll look it up.
So Chelsea reads the day card. Brie, love is an adventure. So Brie is like expecting something fun and crazy, which isn't her usual thing. So she's like, I've got to prepare and do something fun and crazy. She ties her cardigan over one shoulder and under the other arm, which is truly the funnest and craziest thing I've ever seen.
There are a lot of like influencer styling things going on. Like I noticed that. I noticed the like multiple women did the like, I drape my leather jacket over my shoulders, but my arms just sort of sit there, not in the sleeves. I was like, these women have grown up on Instagram. Just, it's very apparent.
Have you guys ever been able to pull off just a jacket draped over the shoulders? Because for me, the effect is not that I am just a beautiful clothes horse.
No, it never works because you end up always having to lift your arms and then your jacket is like hanging off of you or on the ground and it's just not very practical.
Yeah, that's right. Style. Influencers never have to lift their arms and that's what we don't take into account.
Yeah, I was like, some of us move about the world and like use our appendages. I don't know. It's just a thing I have to do sometimes.
Yep.
So the date is riding on like monster wheeled ATVs. Which
it looks fun.
I just want to say up front, people do die doing this. So I was a little stressed when Matt like immediately flips Brie and himself off the ATV while doing donuts.
Oh no, that was legitimately, that part didn't look fun. I was like, this seems very dangerous.
Yeah, it was very stressful. And he was such a guy in that moment. I was like, oh, we're going to just do everything and flip over the ATV. Like, what? Like, sir, can we just take it a little easy? I just met you. It's our first day. Don't kill me.
Yeah, it's a little early to be like risking my life in an ATV accident.
I did like that he looked directly at the camera and was like, sorry, Bree's mom.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I feel well, like we got a little bit more playful Matt on this date. Like, it felt a little bit more natural, not like a person who's trying to process the structure of the show. And I started to enjoy him more, despite the fact that he endangered the life of his date, which was not a good look. At least he recognized that.
Was the personality that Matt showed on this date familiar to you from your time working together at Mike.com?
Absolutely not. The Matt that I know is the Matt from the first episode, the very nervous energy, trying to understand. He wants like a game plan. He needs to kind of know every little detail about something. And I say this as a person who literally worked across the office from him, probably had 3 or 4 conversations with him. Nice guy, but just nervous. I just remember his energy being very nervous. I mean, Mike had a really great track record of hiring extremely attractive people to work there. And I will fully admit I had several crushes on coworkers. And as far as Matt goes, though, it was like beautiful gowns, but the energy was just, I just got nervous when I was around him. Unclear if that was because he was beautiful or because he just was a nervous person.
Maybe both.
Weren't an energetic match. It's true. Aaron, you worked at Mike. My husband worked at Mike. So a lot of really beautiful people.
it's true.
Highly endorsed by me. And Matt James, of course. Whatever. So while they're on this date, the women are back at the hotel. Trying to sort of maintain their composure. You know, they're jealous. There are a lot of women. They know they're not all going to get dates. They all wish they were on the date, but they're trying to, like, you know, be gracious.
Be good sports.
Be good sports. Jasenia says something like, oh, Brie and Matt seem to have a good connection and we should just, like her, like, focus on our time with Matt. And Victoria's like, hold on. What? Listen, I didn't talk to Brie. So, like, I don't have this little, like, friendship you guys have or whatever. I want to be on that date. And the other women start to say, yeah, we're jealous too. And Victoria says, no, I'm not jealous. I want what she has. And I have to say, Victoria's correct. They're all envious. And I think that that is the distinction she was definitely trying to draw.
Absolutely. I think she's just a wordsmith. and she wanted to be precise in her language. We have to appreciate that. It's probably the last potential thing we can stretch our minds to appreciate about Victoria this week. So
yeah,
I'm going to give her
because
that
the one. Next thing she says is, "I'm literally so sick of you guys. I want to hang out with Matt."
I'm like, girl, you've been there 2 days.
Yeah, you don't get to be sick of them yet. So Anna asks Victoria if she's going to go into, she's like, "You're going to go into a tailspin if you think that every time. Don't you think you're going to like spin out?" And Victoria is livid. She's like, "I'm not tailspinning. I'm just the only one being real. You're all fake as shit." What's going on here? Like, this was so abrupt that my first thought was just like, she's full on acting. Like, she was cast by production to like take on a character and be the villain. Are there people who act like this in real life?
Yes.
Am I sheltered? Has being an introvert sheltered me from people who act like this?
I mean, I slacked this to you guys last night, and Victoria is quintessential Karen energy, 100%. I do feel like production was like, yeah, we have to have her because she's going to stir up drama. But she also, and I really feel like she fits that Karen narrative. You know, obviously, she's trying to speak to a manager. She needs to get this situation handled, move things along. But she also kind of reminds me of the whole Bennett and Noah situation from The Bachelorette. Like, I just feel like, let's end the charade, kick Karen out, Victoria, excuse me.
I mean, honest mistake, easy mistake to make. Look, I just want to say that one of my friends has a friend who went to college with Victoria, and she told me that apparently, according, you know, this is a couple steps removed, but a quote, how she is on TV is apparently 100% her personality. So this might just be her. She might. I think the more this went on, the more I got this feeling that like there's a bit of delusion going on. There's like a bit of disconnect from the reality of the situation. And I agree with the big Karen energy going on. I'm surprised she didn't like request to speak to Chris Harrison in order to get the dates switched or just register her dissatisfaction.
Yeah, we do see her even like it seems like she's going a little bit harder at like Jesenia and later Mary Lynn than some of the other white women who are looking at her askance. There definitely is like, I feel like you often get women on the show who are attractive and who are used to kind of being able to have things how they want them in relationships, you know, in the sense that like they're not usually competing with a bunch of women for a guy. And they'll often say that, you know, I'm not used to competing for attention. Victoria is like, I'm not used to competing for attention and I won't have it. Like, yeah, she wants to speak to the manager about it. It's a very weird vibe. On the date, things are going well despite Matt accidentally almost killing Bree. And in fact, that kind of takes over what we see of the date, because at first he's like having fun. They like fall in a heap with each other in the mud. They're laughing. He's like, this brought us closer together. And then he's like, if there's a single bruise on Bree's precious body, her mother will hunt me down and murder me. So he keeps apologizing. He's like, there's no justification for it. But Bree's okay. She's like, I survived. I'm fine. I can at least get a kiss out of it. And so they're in a wood-fired hot tub and they share their first kiss.
I mean, we must note that Matt is tasked with chopping some wood to power this hot tub. And he's like, you know what you need when you chop wood? No shirt. So he just stops, strips. The camera full on pans over his numerous abs And they pair it with this like full on 70s porn music. I was like, what is happening? Like, we've seen this before. I do want to note that this is actually very similar to the way that they treated Sean Lowe during his season. Shower scenes, a lot of panning over with abs, a lot of very uncomfortable music cues. But this
also
was just
a very
like,
buff Christian.
Well, yeah, and a very buff born again Christian. And it was a lot, but Matt is beautiful. And we also got our first of what I suspect will be many hot tubs. This is, you know, a cold weather season. They got to get in the hot tub as much as possible. And Nema Colin seems to provide a beautiful woodsy setting for this plethora of hot tubs.
Yeah.
I am here for all hot tub moments. After screaming at the TV around Victoria, I definitely am reminded why I am tuning in is abs, you know.
Mostly abs.
Right, mostly abs.
I mean, yeah. It's a roller coaster. It's like you hit the lowest low and that's when they bring you all the way back up.
Yep.
Not just with the stripping and the hot tub, but he actually, like, they have him, like, unsheathe his axe in a very suggestive way, which, like, was a little far even for me. The symbolism was strong.
Not lost.
But he and Bree are really clicking. Bree just, like, radiates warmth and positivity in a way that's quite unusual. It's almost, like, palpable through the screen. She just seems like she would be lovely to be around. And so their one-on-one seems to be a huge success. And heading into the night date, Victoria is still back at the house, just talking to apparently a producer.
She called the manager.
Right. She's like, look, I'm not here to make friends, producer. Everyone here is either lying, fake, or losers. We're not here to be in a sorority. And the producer's like, yes, I register your complaint. I'm definitely going to do something about that. She's not going to do anything about it. This is the point of the show, Victoria. And on the night date, Bree and Matt get all dressed up. They head to dinner. And Bree opens up a little bit about her family. We know that she was raised by a single mom. And she says that her mom got pregnant with her when she was 13 years old. And so they're close in age. They're very close in their relationship. And her mom didn't date when she was growing up. Now that Bree's an adult, she said, you know, my mom has a fiance. She's pregnant. She's having a new family. And I'm not living there anymore. And she talks a little bit about how hard that is. This was like a story I've never really heard told on The Bachelor.
It was kind
of this mixture of like, you know, it's poignant. You know, she has this beautiful relationship with her mom, clearly, but like because of the situation her mom was in, like it's complicated. And now she's dealing with her mom having a family again. What did you guys think of this conversation?
It made me really hope that she makes it to hometowns because I'd actually really love to meet her mom. I did some digging on Instagram because I'm, you know, run of the mill creep and found a really sweet photo of her and her mom. And I thought that this story was lovely. I enjoyed getting to know Bree a little bit more. And also it was nice to see Bree and Matt connect over the fact that they were both raised by single parents. They both have complicated relationships with their fathers. I thought they had a really nice connection, and Bree just like remains a fave of mine. Aaron, what did you think?
I like Bree a lot too. She's definitely in my top candidates for Matt. And I think one thing I like on these one-on-one dates is you really do get to know the women. And, you know, a lot of times I may not know someone's name because there are so many of them. But I generally can remember their face and their story. So it was good. I mean, with this date and with his date with yes. Sarah. We got to hear about Sarah's story too, which was, you know, devastating, but also really heartwarming at the same time.
Yeah. And the interesting thing for Emma and I think, and Aaron, since you haven't like been on the Bachelor treadmill of season after season, this is probably less unusual to you, but like, we're really getting to know Matt in this context for the first time. You know, normally yeah. you've seen the lead have some dates on their season that they participated in. We've never seen Matt on a date before. And so we're getting to see how he holds himself in one-on-one conversations that are heavy. And that's, I mean, I feel like it's making him like pop more for me as a person. Like the first episode, it almost doesn't feel real in the same way because I don't have that knowledge of him that I've had with other leads. And now he's like filling out more and like taking up more space in my.
I agree. He's like becoming a more complete person rather than just this like ab man, this like two dimensional.
and he will always be that too.
Don't worry. Yeah. I'm still noticing the abs, but it's nice to get to know him in more of a real way. And also, I was struck by the fact, like, at one point he says, like, I haven't gone on a date in a really long time. And that's also something that, like, you wouldn't be able to say if you had just come off of a season of the show. Like, you kind of would have just been put through the ringer and all of these constructed dates. And he's like, I've been in quarantine, not dating.
He's been with the quarantine crew.
Yeah, I've been hanging out with Tyler C. Like, you know,
yeah.
But yeah, I think it was great to see. And then of course we intercut this beautiful moments between Matt and Brie with like more Victoria. It's just constant. Victoria's commentary was relentless this episode. She's like, I can't be my most authentic self. I need to save all of this for a one-on-one. The other women are just like confused, I think, as we are as an audience. Like, where is this coming from? Why are you manufacturing conflict?
It seems like the behavior that comes after someone has had some time to enter a tailspin,
right?
Which she hasn't had a chance to do. But Matt does offer the rose to Brie, and she accepts the rose. They watch fireworks go off, and of course, because they're all on the same resort, the women hear the fireworks going off directly overhead, which the producers love doing this anyway, just making sure that the women can see or hear whatever fun thing is happening on the one-on-one that they weren't invited to. And it, in this case, pays off really well because the women hear the fireworks and it just explodes all the tension in the house further. The women are saying, oh, so she got the rose. That means that they're at this point in the date and like, good for her. But like, that sucks. And Victoria's like, well, now you guys know how I felt this morning. And you guys were just so rude to me when this is the issue I had all day. I'm here to spend time with Matt. That's important to me. So if it's not important to you, that's perplexing to me. As if she thinks they didn't like understand the feeling of wanting to be on the one-on-one date until this moment, instead of just like being kind.
Right. Also, like, it's not as though, like, you can be envious of someone and still happy for them and still kind to them. Like, these are not mutually exclusive feelings.
I just don't understand why she is acting surprised that this is the way the show that has been on for however many years,
like almost 20 goes. almost 20 years,
why
almost
are you 20. Shocked that Matt is going on a date with someone, one of the other 20 however many women who are in the house with you, to potentially marry him? Like, what? I'm telling you, Karen,
maybe yeah. Well, did she think they were all just gonna sit around all day and just like talk shit about whoever was on the date? Like, maybe that's what she was looking for. She really does seem like to think that it's news to these other women that they're missing out on something, which is not the case. But I found it kind of almost hard to follow the conversation that ensued.
It was nonsensical.
Because of how, it was nonsensical. You know, Piper is like, you're negative and it's bringing us down. And Victoria's like, I'm not negative. You guys were just saying the same thing. And Serena says, you're getting upset. You're getting upset. You're getting upset. And Victoria says, yeah, because you guys are crazy. And then Chelsea says, there's a disconnect because people are speaking for others. No one needs to speak for everyone. We don't all feel the same way. And Victoria's like, yeah, thank you. I'm just being authentic and real. And then she calls out Mary Lynn, who is her roommate, for having said earlier that Mary Lynn wanted to pick Victoria's brain and understand her so she could understand why she acts the way she does. And Mary Lynn says, oh, I said I wanted us to get to know each other and understand each other. And Victoria's like, well, I didn't imagine the words that I just said. Like, you said that.
Okay.
And she stomps off. Mary Lynn says, I'm uncomfortable rooming with Victoria, and gets upset. And Victoria, apparently reacting to this, packs up her stuff and sleeps on the couch in the common space. I'm just like, what's going on?
Like, what is happening? Okay, also, I just want to say that, like, even if she said exactly the words that Victoria said, I'm like, why is that bad? Like, why is that so bad?
Honestly, I would applaud her if she did, because it seemed a little shady, but like...
Like a little shady, that, but not,
I mean,
like...
Victoria's being awful to everyone. Like, it seems like perfectly fine to me to make one little shady comment to her.
Right, but it's not even
it's like,
that
why
shady.
Do you act this way?
Like, in the range of shady mean things that one could reasonably say to Victoria, like, I want to pick your brain and understand why you act the way you do, is like not even that high on the shade scale.
I have no words for her. I won't try to explain Victoria and her mindset. I think it is very clear what her problem is. And she just needs to get kicked off. That's all.
It's baffling that, like, I started this episode thinking that she was a producer plant and a producer pick. And then the more you see Matt interact with her, the more I'm like, does he like Victoria? I'm confused.
No.
We'll get into the actual interactions between Matt and Victoria later in the episode. This point, and like, it's just like Victoria seems to be one of those women who, I mean, it's the Karen thing. She thinks that any horrible thing she says is just being authentic and real, and anything honest that anyone says to her in response is bullying, which is...
Yep.
It's a deeply solipsistic, like, narcissistic way of viewing social interaction. If you want people to all be authentic and real by saying nasty things, then, like, you have to accept that some of those will be directed at you and not just toward them from you.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll have a whole lot more on Queen Victoria's reign of terror. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit betterhelp.com/lovetoseeit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/lovetoseeit.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
And you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week.
Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Just heat and savor the good stuff.
Plus, you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. And you can pause or reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
They're celebrating Earth Day all month long at Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Especially since I've been back from my travels, I've gotten really out of practice with my normal meal prep. And so Factor has been really helping me kind of bridge that gap, know that I have healthy, whole meals in my fridge ready to eat when I need them.
Head to factormeals.com/LTSI50 and use code LTSI50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code LTSI50 at factormeals.com/LTSI50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all, like, weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, there's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
Allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's Quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quince.com/LTSI. And now back to the show. So the next date card has 18 women on it because it is the solo group date. And the women attending will be Chelsea, Serena P, Abigail, Sydney, Ileana, Kristen, Lauren, Jasenia, Serena C, Kit, Kylie, Katie, MJ, Mari, Piper, Rachel, and Victoria. I'm looking for the one.
It's a lot of women. It's a lot of women.
He's looking for the one out of these 18 women. And it's a rainy, misty morning on the bucolic slopes of Nemacolin. And Matt is roaming the fields in a tuxedo. It's really romantic. It's like right out of Pride and Prejudice.
Because look, Claire, he wants a healthy marriage. He hasn't seen this. And he's like, you know, I know the way to find a healthy marriage. It's to stage a wedding photo shoot, which turns into a cutthroat game. With 18 women I've had a total of 5 collective conversations with. That's how you model a healthy marriage. That's just what I know.
Marriage is one part photo shoots in front of 17 other women and one part capture the flag with paint.
That's how you and Greg structure your relationship, right?
That's correct. And it's exhausting, especially now that we have a child, you know, to squeeze that in. Amidst our daily photo shoots and color wars. So there's like a greenery arch set up and the women are all dressing. They're sent to dress themselves up in wedding gowns and veils for their shoots with Matt. Victoria grabs a crown, of course. Have you heard? She's Queen Victoria. She's like, I know the women are annoyed by my strong personality, but that's what's going to make me stand out to Matt. And I'm curious to see, as a woman who at one point in my life thought that being very abrasive would make me stand out in a good way to men, more effective in fiction than in reality. That's fine. Like, you just have to know it's not really a good dating strategy. So the photo shoot begins.
Franco is back.
Franco's back. He's wearing like a feathered cape.
Or incredible outfit, incredible fashion moment.
Also, pants.
Do we think Franco has just been like quarantining since Tayshia and Claire's season with the Bachelor crew and he just like moved from La Quinta right to Nemacolin?
Probably.
I hope he's full-time staff. I do.
I hope in the off season he just is around Warner Brothers, just like taking photos. So they're taking their photo shoots. Jasenia goes up, Serena P. She's like, Matt's looking for the one. I feel like I would be an incredible wife and an incredible mother. This is that wife and mother audition that they've all been waiting for. And Mari is taking her photos. Franco is sort of chatting to her in Spanish, it seems like,
this
shoot. Because, well, the reason I mentioned is because then Victoria seems to try to, like, pivot off of this to jump in and say, Las Royal Wedding.
Oh, my God. I missed that. I just heard her say Royal Wedding.
She, like, bursts forward and is like, Las Royal Wedding. Unless I, like, completely hallucinated.
Given what we've seen of Victoria, I would not put it past her.
And everyone's like, no, sweetie, Mari's not done. Like, you can't just, no, it's not your turn. And Mari finishes her shoot, and then Franco tries to call Piper, and Victoria's like, did you forget me? And Franco's like, no, I didn't forget.
He was like, I was trying to ignore you.
Then they let Victoria take the next shoot slot, so it all works out for her. She makes Matt take a garter off her thigh and then makes out with him.
It really, he was not into this makeout. It felt really awkward. I was like, this man is just trying so hard to be gracious, and this makes me feel uncomfy, like so much about Victoria.
I hate it.
I have to say, offering them garters, you know, I think production really set this situation up. I would just be like, don't give them garters. I don't want to, well, you know, that's just me. So at that point, Chris Harrison shows up. Half the women still haven't had their photo shoots. And when it becomes apparent that there will be no more photo shoots. If I'm Piper, I'm really pissed. Just throwing that out there. And he's like, Matt's looking for a woman who will fight for him. Really fight. Like, hurt someone for Matt. Just for a little time with Matt. Like, someone who will rip the beating heart out of another woman and crush it into the dirt for Matt. And to accomplish this, they are going to play a game of essentially capture the flag.
But with a stuffed heart.
With stuffed hearts. And, like, tagging people on the other team out with, like, paint. And the team that wins will get the night day with Matt, of course. And Chris says the other women will get to take their ruined dresses home and wonder who's making out with Matt.
Harrison is just trolling at this point. He's like, look, I got nothing to do on this resort. Let me break some
hearts.
He's like,
it's like, Chris, do you think they're not thinking about that already? These women are already at the verge of, like, poisoning each other at this point. And I specifically do mean Victoria.
Yeah. Also, Chris is like, there's no rules. Get as aggressive as possible. Yeah. Although they do generally seem to have a lot of fun with this. Like, it does seem, like, pretty lighthearted. They're, like, dipping bouquets in paint and, like, you know, bashing each other lightly. The one thing I was concerned about was that they seem to have, like, purses that they can hit each other in the face with, which felt a little more dangerous than, like, a bouquet tap.
Yeah, I mean, would you guys, you know, participate in this for a little extra time with Matt?
This is when I got off my couch and got some more wine, because I every
so you wouldn't even watch it for a little extra time with Matt.
I couldn't. I every time there's some kind of game on this show, I just get really nervous, and I can't. The secondhand embarrassment, like, all of it is too much for me. And I would have half played the little game and hoped my team won. And, like, that would have been the end of it for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's my general, like, team sport vibe, is, like, appear to be participating, but, like, never have the, like, fate of the team resting on me. It's just, like, exactly. Dodge around, try to paint some people, but, like, never go in for the heart. That totally would have 100%. Been, would have been my vibe. Yes.
I was the kid who used to, like, play in the dirt at the other side of the field during soccer games. So I would probably just do something like
Claire's
that.
Claire's, like, wandering off into Nemacolin, like, looking at
I'm
the
sorry,
leaves.
Sorry, were we playing a game?
But
I always find it a little weird, like, unpleasant when they do competition dates that involve them, like, physically attacking each other or doing something to, like, you know, like, even yeah. just the whole, like, oh, they're crazy brides, you know, is not a trope that I like to see reflected on my screen. However, as activities go, it's far from the most humiliating one that we have seen the women on The Bachelor put
right
through.
I mean, the thought of, like, getting to totally destroy fancy wedding gowns, that seems fun to me, like, seeing yeah. them all just, like, cut off the trains of their dresses. There was something sort of, like, satisfying about that. I was like, yeah, that part of the game I'll definitely participate in. But ultimately, the red team prevails.
MJ comes in with the sneak attack and just like grabs the yellow team's heart. And so Chris declares that Mari is the most valuable bride, MVB, and thus gets to join the winning team. Yeah. It's unclear.
They like neglected to show us what made her the most valuable bride.
I think it was because she had the heart. She had grabbed the other team's heart, but then she got tackled by all of them. But she like had, they like, her team almost won.
I like brides that don't get tackled, personally.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, if she were that great, they would have won. I'm just saying.
That's how I was like, what? Like, this isn't how MVPs work.
No, it's not. It's certainly not.
If you're the MVP, you get added to the winning team. That's.
It didn't make any sense, but.
Those are the rules.
There are no rules. So there's right, no there logic no in this.
I actually thought, I mean, so Victoria's on the red team, which wins. We do see maybe our most positive side of Victoria when she is given a reason to be on the same side as literally anyone else.
She was kinder. That,
right. And it's that glimpse of a moment where you're like, maybe she just really doesn't thrive at all in a competitive setting. Like, maybe she's the sort of person where you put her in competition with every woman around her in a very explicit way, and she just can't handle it.
She sort of gave me gives me Tierra vibes in that way.
Yeah.
From Sean's.
Also,
season.
We should mention, however, on the other side of the equation, that an Instagram photo of Victoria did surface, in which there's a Trump flag in the background.
Yeah, which allegedly she like posted that wasn't her flag and she was at a makeup artist's house, whatever. I think, look, regardless, it's sus. She's sus. I don't trust that girl. Serious Karen energy. Like, she also seemed to be hosting what appeared to be like a super spreader event watch party for the premiere, like with like 12 people. So I'm just like, okay, you don't believe in the pandemic. Like, there's a lot of red flags that all probably add up. So I don't
also
trust
her. We checked out her business page.
Oh,
she
dear
owns,
Lord.
Like a beauty and tanning business.
Claire, I think you need to read this post. I think Aaron needs to hear the caption of this. It's the crazy.
So back last summer, she posted a post for the Black Lives Matter movement, which is difficult to really wrap your head around. What she wrote was, Black Lives Matter. We apologize for a delay in commenting, but have been educating ourselves on the injustice in the system. We strive to do better and speak up. With Jet Set Glow, all skin tones are welcome, and a spray tan isn't about making you darker necessarily. It more so evens your skin tone and contours your muscles, so Black and white clients are happy after. Hashtag LA, hashtag BLM, hashtag we stand with you.
You cannot make this shit up. You cannot.
Wait.
So
I read first half and I was like, okay, so just like a bad BLM post. And then I saw the word tanning further down the caption. I was like, I'm sorry, I need to return to that.
Oh, I mean, forgive me. I thought tanning was specifically a process to make your skin darker.
It's also
what I thought.
Well, you would be wrong, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I need to educate myself on the injustice in the system, generally.
I can't even formulate words to respond to this in a way that, I mean, a post about BLM, about your business not responding, and then having SponCon, essentially, in it, around your tanning solution that you think Black people are now going to be using.
Look, Aaron, you take every opportunity to promote yourself. Like, hustle, you know? She's just out here. She's out here being an ally. She's educating herself on the injustice in the general system. What system? Who can say? The system. There's injustice.
And there's tanning.
The important thing is that tanning is not part of the system. It's a good thing.
It's a contouring method.
It's a contouring and also equal skin tone flattening and also a contouring process that promotes justice and equity. And I think I learned a lot from that caption. I don't even know where to go from there, but let's push ahead. The night date arrives. Mari and the red team are getting more time with Matt. So it's still a good amount of women. It's like 10 women. And the group date Rose is waiting on the table when they arrive. And Lauren is ready to really make a play. She hasn't talked to Matt since her limo exit. She was one of the women who didn't get time with him that first night. And so she pulls him early on. They sit down and he asks what she wants in a relationship. And she says, someone who's a man of faith. And wouldn't you know, but a man of faith is sitting right in front of her in Matt James. Her dad, she says, always told her the secret to his beautiful marriage to her mother was God. And she wants that for her marriage. And she wants a marriage where they accept their imperfections, but also they just accept each other. And Matt says, you know, I usually don't lead with being Christian when I'm dating because there are preconceptions. It turns people off. But I'm so glad that we share that value. He did lead very hard with being Christian on The Bachelor. So I'm intrigued to hear that that's not his usual approach to dating, actually.
I was struck by this conversation for a couple reasons. First, I felt like actually this conversation felt much more the way that religion should be approached on the show, as opposed to what we saw in the first episode with like a forced group prayer without, you know, the acknowledgement that not everyone might share the same faith traditions, or allowing people to kind of opt out of that. Whereas this is like two people organically connecting over the fact that they do share the same faith and that they do value that faith in terms of finding a partner. So that seemed, you know, like a genuine connection. I also was struck, though, at just by how explicitly the show has seemed to want to frame Matt as a Christian man, kind of first and foremost. And it felt, it just in my mind, having seen a lot of very religious Christian leads on this show, the fact that with Matt, it seems to be mentioned more explicitly and more often and kind of centered more, especially given that like we don't know him outside of this. And I felt a little like odd about that. And I have, I also heard again from a friend of mine through a friend of hers that knows Matt in New York that allegedly production kind of said to him explicitly, like, we want you to kind of lead with your Christianity. And it makes me wonder, like, why they want so badly for their first Black bachelor to have his faith kind of be like the defining feature of his narrative. Erin, I'm curious what you felt about that.
You know, I guess it's really interesting to me because, I mean, I grew up in the church. My mother grew up in the church. It's very, very much a part of my family's upbringing and like our traditions. But when what I imagine Matt's church experience to be is probably very much different from mine. I grew up in a Black Baptist church. I know Matt grew up with his white mother. I imagine him going to a white church. I think about how there are a lot of, Black Christians who do have those conversations really early on in dating someone about their faith and spirituality. And I think for me, I kind of just wonder more about his beliefs when he brings it up than it does to soothe me in any kind of way in watching this.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like the show has traditionally shied away from religion, partly maybe for that reason, to some extent, that like it reminds people of something that's very personal and sensitive to them that there's so much disagreement about and so many variations of. And like when you find out that someone that you think of as like this highly prized bachelor is of a faith tradition that troubles you in some way or that's in conflict with yours, that can be divisive, and it's not worth it to like really raise that. But they've gone further and further in the direction of just like hoping, I guess, that it will be more of a binder between the bachelor and the religious Christians who are watching. And I'm interested in why they are making that decision. And, you know, he brings it up also in the context later in the episode of just when Sarah shares something personal and painful. He says, you know, what I lean on when I'm having a hard time is my faith. So I'll be praying for your family. You know, that's a level of introducing it even in a one-on-one conversation that I don't think we've seen among even our most religious leads in the past who would say, you know, faith is important to me. They wouldn't necessarily in a conversation about something else be like, well, I lean on my faith, so I'll pray for you. So that really, really struck me. And did any other conversations from this group date stand out to you guys? He had a couple more, I guess, with Jasenia and Victoria. He has sit downs.
The Jasenia conversation struck me. I mean, she does talk about how she was cheated on, but I was much more struck by Matt's very gendered response to that, in which he said, like, I feel like being a man, you have certain responsibilities. Protect your wife, provide for your family. Love your wife, love your family. Again, like, really wonderful to have a protective energy over your family, to prize like loving your partner and your family. I think these are really important things. If you want to like be a provider in whatever way you define that, great. But it did give me that like tinge of ickiness of like, well, as a man, this is why I have this responsibility. I am the protector and you are like the one that needs protection. Instead of, you know, personally, what I like to see is kind of like a more equal division of those responsibilities, and that people have the ability to, you know, protect each other and provide for each other in a variety of different ways.
That was my initial reaction too. And that's definitely something I give weight to, as we've discussed many times on this podcast. I also like, I feel like his family background probably gives a little extra context there, which is that like, he yeah. feels like his father didn't live up to his responsibilities. And sometimes that can result in people latching on a little bit more to these like role expectations that they didn't necessarily see modeled in their family, but that they felt the lack of and that they would hope that they would do in the future. And I think to some level, we are seeing Matt kind of grapple with that in when he talks about what he wants to be in a relationship.
No, I think that's a really, really good point.
And then they kiss.
Lovely. And then we get
lots of kissing.
We get the Victoria conversation. Have you ever seen a man be like attempting to be gracious, but so clearly disinterested in another person? Because this was just a stunning exchange to me.
Yeah, his whole body language was like, I'm listening to you, but I already know what I'm going to do about this situation, but I hear you and I can't believe what you're saying. And now we are going to make actions about it. But I hope he is actually, the thing about watching The Bachelor and The Bachelorette for me is I'm always like, please tell me you are smarter than whatever this crazy person is telling you right now, and you are going to get them the hell up out of here. Because I can't.
I'm worried that, so this is actually the first of two conversations we see between Matt and Victoria this episode. Yes. And both are unsettling to me, and you would think would be unsettling to Matt. Both times his reactions kind of surprised me, although he doesn't seem super into it. He also doesn't seem as repulsed as I would be. Victoria basically sits down with Matt and is like, I have a lot of sides. You know, I come across as confident. I'm not always confident. I'm human. I have insecurities. For example, when I was picking out a dress, I was like, oh, I hope I don't look fat, you know, for Matt, you know? And he was like, you look great. And she's like, thank you. And he's like, yeah, you know, I get it. I'm not always as together as I seem. And I want to keep getting to know you because you're beautiful. And can I take you back upstairs?
He was like, let's pivot away from this.
Yes. Let's pivot away from talking about your fat phobia.
You have insecurities. I have insecurities. I think we've found common ground in our shared basic humanity. Now it's time for you to go. And she's like, but let's make out. And he obliges. And then she says, I haven't been that deep with a guy for a while. I was like, what?
You went nowhere, girl. Yeah, like,
what? Where was the depth? I'm very confused.
So what we do know about this show is that it's possible she shared something else that
very
was
true.
Cut in order to make her look more. We know that this happened with Olivia Caridi on Ben's season, that they sort of chopped her conversation with Ben into her basically being like, sorry about your friend who died. I'm worried that I have cankles. And like, that isn't necessarily an accurate reaction of or an accurate depiction of how these moments go. That being said, we certainly do not see any evidence that they went very deep. And it's certainly possible that she thinks saying I was worried that I would look fat in the dress qualifies as sharing something very deep. So jury's still out on this one.
But that is
not looking good.
Then why she is disturbed that Matt gives the rose to Lauren. Victoria's like, I shared a lot and went out of my way during the day. So yeah, I guess my sharing things wasn't enough. I was also struck by the fact that this like betrays a very clear understanding of the trauma economy of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. She was like, I guess the problem isn't that Matt isn't into me, but the problem is that I didn't reveal enough traumatic things about myself. Guess it's time to dig around into the depths and come up with more for next time.
Well, it's also like the narcissism again that like she's the only real player in this game. Like, if she shares enough, she should get the rose. Like, there's no question of what other women might be sharing. You know, that's not part of the equation. And I don't want to, like, totally gloss over the comment about being worried she would look fat. I think it just really bothered me. Because, of course, we, like, a lot of women do worry that they look fat. Like, that's real. But there's no body diversity on this show. Like, we just see a bunch of really skinny women being picked for dates and showered with attention. And then the only even like mention of fatness is women making comments like this. And like, that really bums me out.
It was like a stark reminder of how much thinness is prized on this show. And also just like how fucking ingrained fat phobia is in our culture that like if in fact this was the deep, scary thing that Victoria shared, like for a lot of women, that is like a legitimate constant fear in the back of their minds, because like the worst thing that one could be as a woman is to be fat. And, you know, obviously this is like an issue that extends far beyond Victoria, and we don't get a whole lot of conversations about bodies. I think probably because the show doesn't want to call attention to the fact that they have so little body diversity. But I think you accurately described, Claire, why that like comment felt so kind of like, ugh.
Bummer. Bummed me
out. Bummer.
So we're on to the final date of the week. Sarah, sky is the limit for us. A few women who didn't get dates this week, Maggie, Alana, Marilyn, Anna, one other woman, I lost track. And so Sarah and Matt, of course, will be going up in a biplane, the tiniest plane I've ever seen. It looks like one of those balsa wood planes that you get in a kit. You would not catch me in that, ever.
No, terrifying.
I would get divorced to not have to get in that plane.
Yeah, I was. Nope.
And they kind of cut out the pilot such that it almost looks like Matt is flying her while snuggling with her and making out with her, which made me feel even more anxious, even though logically I knew there was also a pilot.
Yep.
Added to the feeling of danger. And so the women at the resort, of course, see them flying overhead. They're very jealous, you know. They're envious. No. Rachel's like, this is more special of a first date than I've ever done. I'm so jealous. And I was like, you know, I don't think I've ever been on a first date that wasn't just have a drink at a terrible bar. So
right.
I can't relate. I've never wanted to be in a tiny plane on a first date.
Or ever. Or on like a millionth date or like in my life.
So having fear bonded in the plane, Matt and Sarah sit by a fire and talk about family. And what I forgot before this conversation happened, but that is relevant, is that we learn a lot about Sarah's family in her intro package, but she has not actually told that stuff to Matt. So I kept being like, why is Matt being so weird about this? What does he want to know? And that's because I already knew all the stuff he was trying to find out.
Yep.
So he's asking about her parents, how much they're in touch. And she's like, oh, I'm very close with my mom, even more so than my dad. Even more so with my dad. It's hard to be away from them, but they support me being here. And Matt can tell she's like holding something back that's relevant to her family. And he's like, I need her to be vulnerable. Other women are doing that. I need that from her. It's always kind of like, I'm always like, are producers telling him he needs to get more on this? Or can he just sense it from her body language like a bloodhound?
I felt like they were telling him because at the night portion of the date where they're having dinner by a pool, he's basically like just says directly, I need you to go deeper in our conversation tonight. Like he just launches right in. I was like, oh, this is a guy who hasn't been on this show before. Like he has no finesse. He's just like, look, they told me, like, we need to go deep. You're hiding something. Can you just, like, tell me?
Yeah.
He's like, just share the trauma. And we've talked about our, like, concerns with, again, this kind of trauma economy. But ultimately, this conversation seems to go well.
Yeah. So this is when Sarah shares that when she was in college, her dad got sick. He was diagnosed with ALS. She sort of explains how the disease progresses, the life expectancy. And she says her father has surpassed his doctor's expectations. He's still here. It's 5 years after he was diagnosed. But it's been really hard, you know, watching him progress in the illness. And she tells Matt that she left her career in TV news to be a caregiver. And talks about doing these things for her dad that he used to do for her when she was very little. And this is when Matt says, you know, the thing that gives me strength is my faith, and I'll pray for you and your family. And this conversation is very heartfelt and beautiful and just the perfect segue to them stripping down and getting into an outdoor hot tub, which is what happens next.
Oh,
two
yes.
Hot tubs already.
I mean,
I love it.
We're going to get a lot of these, but I really liked this date. I liked both of the one-on-ones, and Sarah seems great. I thought this conversation was great. And one can just imagine that watching any close person to you with a degenerative disease is just absolutely, absolutely devastating. And I did see that Matt linked in his Instagram story to an organization that does ALS research. And I thought that was a really nice way for him to use his platform to kind of bring attention to ALS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now cocktail party, because she gets the rose, which, duh.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's time for the cocktail party. I had to take a pause and reflect on how much happens at this cocktail party and think about whether I'm really ready to discuss it.
I'm not.
Are you guys ready to discuss this?
No, I'm not ready to relive that.
Should we cancel? We're canceling the cocktail party. So Matt sits down with Abigail and they talk about, you know, how hard it is to get to know each other in a group setting. She wants to give him a signal. She's like, if I fix my earring, it'll be like blowing you a kiss. And he's like, oh, I'll pull on my earlobe too. It'll be our shared signal. They seem to still have a good connection. And he's like, we're all just getting more comfortable. We're all relaxed. I'm blown away by how the women can articulate themselves. Which I'm also shocked to
like,
see.
Like, Matt, you shouldn't be, like, what kind of dating experiences have you been having?
Right.
He's, like, shocked. He's like, women can talk. Speak. Okay. That is, they my mind is talk. Blown. He has a very sweet little conversation with Maggie, who, again, I want more from her.
She didn't get a date this Maggie. Week.
She didn't even get a date.
I don't even know who that is. So
she's the Ethiopian model slash pharmacist.
Yes.
Oh, I like her.
She's who beautiful. Seems she's just like 10 years older than all the other women there. And just like probably like I'm like, please exclude me from this narrative.
And we do get a little of her during the cocktail party, sort of trying to make sense of
Victoria.
What's about to
and then
ensue.
She's like, And Marilyn sits down with Matt and, you know, she didn't get a date and Matt does like a very sweet thing where like clearly a producer has like run to the local dollar store to procure an orchid, which is Marilyn's.
A dollar store orchid, the most valuable kind.
Well, sorry. My friend texted me last night to be like, I've stayed at Nemacolin and there is nothing nearby except for a dollar store. So now I'm like convinced that's the only place that they can go. And Marilyn is obviously like very overjoyed because he did something thoughtful. She brings back this orchid and Victoria is just put over the edge. She's like, now that I've seen the orchid, I must tattle on Marilyn. And
yeah,
this begins...
Victoria has a lot to say already at this point. She's like, Marilyn is toxic. She brings toxic energy. I can't be with her in our room. That just goes back to me being an empath. And if I'm around that energy, it can just take over.
Let me just say,
want to flag here. The
not
word
an empath.
The word empath is a bad sign. If you describe yourself as an empath, I'm keeping an extra close eye on you at this point.
Also, like, you're not an empath. She has no empathy for other people. She's not an empath. I mean, also, I want to call out that like
people figured out that they could use empath to mean like I'm affected by other people's actions.
Right.
Yes.
And that's
that.
I also just want to flag that Victoria going so hard after Marilyn feels especially gross because it does feel like that sort of like Karen calling the, you know, reporting the woman of color to the authorities vibe. Like she like goes over to Matt and is like, I need to tell you that Marilyn manipulated me and she bullied me and I had to sleep on the couch because she's so toxic. And Matt, who is again unaware of the playbook that is often used by people, especially people sort of framed by the show as villains on this show, is like clearly worried. He doesn't want to support bullying. He's so trusting and he's like takes
I'm
what Victoria
all
says.
Be best here.
And so then he's like, I'm so sorry, Victoria, that you have been going through this. Mm. And he's off to investigate, which we know always goes very well.
So this is what baffled me. Like he just had a conversation with Marilyn, who is like, I mean, what Victoria says about Marilyn is she cries to manipulate situations. We do see Marilyn cry because Victoria's like shrieking at her. And we also see Marilyn cry a little bit with Matt because she's upset that she didn't get a date. She's worried that she upset him in some way. It's clear that Marilyn is a crier. Like Emma and myself. That doesn't mean that she's manipulating people by crying. But nevertheless, Matt just sat down with Marilyn and she comes off as so like gentle and sweet and kind of shy. And he just sat down with Victoria, who I thought he had pegged as kind of a piece of work. And instead he's like, I think Victoria is probably telling the truth here. What do you guys think is going through Matt's head?
I think he tries to accept everybody in their moment as who they are, as their like very truthful selves. So like, I think he believed Victoria 100% and is like, okay, like now I need to go about whatever investigation he is going to end up doing. And like, I, you know, obviously we'll get to the end of the episode in a second, but like, I feel incomplete that I don't know what ended up transpiring and that I have to go another week with Victoria lingering in the freaking shadows of this bachelor situation. I just think he believes her until, is going to believe her until people tell her actually no.
Yeah, he seems like a naturally sort of trusting person. He's like, well, someone told me she was hurt. I don't like when people are hurt.
Why would anyone make that up? Which, again, I do think in that moment we see his naivete in the bachelor world that, like, if you're on the show, then you know to be suspicious when someone just comes to you and makes a really strong allegation, like, 2 days into the season about another contestant. But Matt has none of that. He's like, I don't understand a world in which there would be a motive to make this up to me. And that's because he's never been on the show before. He's like a babe in the woods.
So he comes back and he pulls Marilyn out to, you know, investigate again. And Victoria comes and just like launches into a tirade about Marilyn to in front of all of the women. It's striking how little she seems to care about having any allies or friends in the house. She just does not care at all. And all of the other women are just like befuddled. They're like, we have been spending a lot of time with Marilyn and this seems very out of character and nothing you're saying makes a lick of sense.
Yeah. MJ is like, I disagree. I've never seen her be rude to anyone. And Victoria's like, it was shocking when she was like that to me, like that, doing a lot of work in that sentence. She's like, it was super weird. Maggie is also like, I'm shocked. I don't think Marilyn would say anything really hurtful. It doesn't seem, I mean, I wasn't there for sure, but like, it doesn't really sound right. So Victoria is not finding allies among the women. I'm almost surprised that she tried to tell them about it.
It was weird. Yeah. All of her behavior is so bizarre. Like, none of it is particularly tactical, even.
It's not tactical. It doesn't seem calculated to like win herself allies or even to like stay out of difficult conversations. She clearly just enjoys confrontation, right? Like,
it's very
she truly does. People say that about certain people, but I've never really seen it so much the case. So Matt tells Marilyn what Victoria said to him, and she's like, well, I have to defend myself. I don't want to be in drama, but it's her word against mine, and all I can say is I'm not someone who would be spiteful to someone, and it's not okay with me that she's jeopardizing our time together. What can I do to show you that I'm telling the truth? And Matt's like, I just have a lot to think about. It's turned into a she said, she said. He's heard both sides, and now he doesn't know who to believe. It's tricky.
Another crack investigation by Matt James, you know?
The Bachelor almost never does a good job investigating these things.
No.
Whereas the women are often really good at investigating these things when they're the lead, and that's why every season should just be the Bachelorette. So Marilyn comes back out and asks Victoria to speak with her. Victoria refuses to go outside because it's cold. So all the other women tactfully leave. Marilyn has to sit. Victoria gets up and moves to another couch so that they aren't sitting together.
Like, what?
And then they have...
So rude.
Truly one of the more baffling conversations even of the episode. Marilyn is trying to say, there's been miscommunication. I clearly hurt your feelings. I'm very sorry. I acknowledge that you are hurt. But I don't want to keep fighting. And Victoria's like, well, we have two different realities for what happened, and I don't want to fight either, but you're toxic and manipulative. I think we're like oil and vinegar. We make a delicious dressing and we're shaken up together. And Marilyn's like, I really think we can come to an understanding if we try. And Victoria says, I don't care to, Marilyn. And then she leaves as Marilyn is sort of plaintively being like, I didn't say those things. Victoria's like, you're too much for me.
This was like a really like psychotic conversation, and I felt really bad for Marilyn, who seems like a gentle soul who just like got brought into this drama because she was rooming with Victoria.
And I feel like Marilyn's response was like, it's literally the kind of response from a person who was like, I'm literally not here for your ridiculous drama, but like I'm trying to calm the situation down and bring the temperature down. And you very much quickly see that, which we didn't need any more signs that this was the case, that Victoria is unhinged, where someone with a little less tact or a little more I'll take you there if I need to, would have been like, girl, you are crazy. Like, we are not about to do this. Because that would have been me if I was Marilyn. That she was able to just kind of retreat and say, look, I'm trying to squash this so we can move on. They need to show Matt that clip so he can, like I said, kick Karen
He'll
off
see it at the end after he and Victoria week. Are engaged. He'll see all of this and it'll be too late. I mean, this show really proved to me season after season that the whole idea that it takes two to tango is like two people to have a detente, which we have seen happen, like two women who hate each other being like, we don't want this to be a storyline. Let's just leave each other alone. And then it goes away. It's happened. Other times, one person doesn't want to make it go away. So it doesn't. All it takes is one person to keep the feud going. And Victoria's decided to be that person because she genuinely cares about human connection. And Marilyn took advantage of that and bullied her. And that's really tough. So it's time for the rose ceremony. Matt has just been thinking this over and I guess not gathering any more information about it, which is a good sign. And so he stands up in front of the women and says, I heard some things that were concerning, but I'm going to continue to follow my heart. And he starts handing out roses. Piper, Kit, Maggie, Rachel, Abigail, Chelsea, Jasenia, Katie, Serena C. And at this point, Sarah, overcome by all the excitement and probably some champagne and standing in heels on a riser at 3 a.m, starts to black out.
And I think Bree grabs her and kind of leads her off to a producer. And Matt stops, rushes over, and a medic comes over and is like, this woman is about to black out. And that's where we cut, which is extremely convenient on the show's part to force this drama into the beginning of next week's episode. But we do see a little bit of footage from next week, and it feels as if either Victoria gets a rose or like no one gets sent home and they just cancel the rose ceremony because of Sarah's fainting. But Victoria seems to be the center of conflict yet again.
At least we have a full
week
to
brace ourselves. So much to look forward to.
Yeah.
Exactly. On MLK Day, no less. I would love to see our dear queen, air quotes on that, be kicked off on a day honoring a historic, you know, a civil rights icon. I mean, it's only right, though I do agree it seemed like we might see more of her. beyond, which is, you know,
the least they could do is send her home on MLK Day. So
I agree. Yes. Justice in some small way must be served.
Erin, thank you so, so much for joining us today and taking a break from your normal duties of preventing us from publishing insane things on HuffPost. We really appreciate it. This was so much fun.
Thanks for having me. I can come back anytime.
Yes, we'll definitely have to do it again.
Okay, now it's time for some feminism fails, and we do have a few this time.
Oh, this episode was just overall, as we called out, there's like an atmosphere of unsisterliness that seemed more harmful than positive overall. A few specific instances we want to call out. Serena C. at one point says the claws are about to come out and that things are going to get catty. We did hear a few comments of this nature, which, you know, just play into those old bachelor tropes of women catfighting over men. So I'm going to give that a 2.5.
And then, as we mentioned earlier, we have Matt kind of asserting his duties, quote, as a man. He has the responsibility to protect his wife, provide for your family. Claire gave some great context to why we might see Matt clinging so much to those sort of retrograde ideas, but we're still going to give that one like a 3.5. It's great to be a provider and love your partner and family, regardless of your gender identity.
Agreed. And Victoria, you know, was deeply unpleasant to all of the women throughout this episode. But I specifically wanted to call out the way that she keeps saying this isn't a sorority. And, you know, I wasn't in a sorority personally, but there is a sort of disdain for the idea of women gathering together in a group and trying to get along that that came up with a few of the women, especially Victoria, this episode, the idea that, like, it's better to just spend time with men rather than with a group of women. And that's something that The Bachelor does tend to traditionally perpetuate. And we've seen more friendships show up in recent seasons and more positivity about that. But when the show leans into like reinforcing that, you know, sororities are pathetic and sad or silly, and that spending time with a man is like a better way to spend your time, I always find that really off-putting. Just a way of downgrading women's friendships and connections with each other. And so I'm going to give that a 3.5.
And on that note, that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks so much to our wonderful guest and stellar boss, Erin Evans, and our producers, Nick Offenberg and Sarah Patterson.
Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram at Here to Make Friends Pod. And you can follow us individually on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose.
We'll be back next week to recap episode 3 of Matt James's season of The Bachelor.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.